This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the RPM sub-team for URS practitioners taking place on Wednesday, the 28th of February, 2018. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
Hi, this is Kathy. I don't know if you can hear me on a moving train. Right now I'm on audio, although I'll try to come into the Adobe room.
Perfect. Thank you, Kathy. Noted. Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thanks so much, Terry, and thank you all for joining. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So staff had suggested a proposed agenda for today, and perhaps we could just run through that and see if everyone agrees that that's a good approach. And welcome, Kathy. I see that we also have you in the Adobe Connect as well as on the telephone now, so thank you so much for that. And thank you also, Zhu Heng, for joining as well. So the agenda that we suggested was for the sub-team to continue reviewing and developing objective questions for URS practitioners, as well as the list of practitioners. And we've put the links in the agenda pod as well as in the chat room. And then to discuss next steps and the next meeting, in particular reporting at ICANN 61, noting that questions will be forthcoming from the document sub-team for practitioners for this sub-team to consider, and then planning for completing our work and whether or not there's a need for further meetings. Having run through that, and I noted also that Jason had volunteered to chair last time, so I'm hoping, Jason, you don't mind that I've slightly usurped your chair duties. Perhaps I can turn it over to Jason and to the group for any questions about the agenda.
Okay, it's Jason Schaefer here, working group subgroup chair. Thank you, Julie. I think those that is a good agenda as far as moving forward. I know as a point of housekeeping, there was some misunderstanding. Since last call, we had some spreadsheets uploaded, and we ended up uploading a full spreadsheet that many of the working group, subgroup participants participated on that would be a more broad spreadsheet to cover all practitioners and identify additional names than the ones that we identified on last week's call. So I hope everybody's okay with working with that master spreadsheet, which I believe is one of the links that Julie has provided. We also have the other spreadsheet for questions as we culled together a pretty decent list of questions last week. At this point, I think it's important to figure out, at this point, I think let's try to source through the practitioner names are that's the easier point to handle. We have 10 names on there on the top of the list. And then we have the additional names that we're slowly finding as we go through case by case. Yeah, it looks like we have 11 names of practitioners on the URS practitioner sheet, which in and of itself, I think those names alone are a pretty comprehensive list. I guess at this point, if we're going to tackle the URS practitioners, it might make sense to spend some time over the next week going through that list and seeing if there are any names that are routinely appearing in the cases that have not been included on the top of that list. If everybody can see the top of that list, we have number 3 through 13, starting with David Taylor and ending with John Berryhill in no particular order. Does anybody have any questions or thoughts on how we tackle this part of the task of identifying these practitioners now that we have this fairly comprehensive list that we're working on? I see Greg has his hand up. Greg?
Thanks. Greg Chatton for the record. Just a question, since I was not on last week's call. Is the intent to only ask a select subgroup of usual suspects, if you will, or to send the questionnaire to all attorneys or representatives that we have seen on either side of any of these cases?
Okay, thank you, Greg. That's a good question. The intent was to originally to find a subset of practitioners that are experienced with the URS that would be a good cross set of participants, rather than just doing a global email to anybody and everyone who's ever been involved with a URS proceeding. As we spoke last week, we were really determining that in many cases, the practitioners are those that are really most familiar with the UDRP, and there is some crossover to the URS, as I think we all know on this call. Very few people are, we'll call them seasoned URS practitioners, but rather they're more seasoned at the UDRP and may have had one or two or a handful of URS proceedings. Does that answer your question, Greg?
Yeah, I think so. So it sounds like we are going with kind of a smaller group, and I guess the question is whether there would be utility to asking these questions of the larger group. I guess part of it depends on how burdensome the questionnaire is going to be and how many people we want to subject it to. But there could also be utility in surveying all the practitioners who've been involved, rather than trying to make a cut, especially if the cut isn't really based on URS seasoning, but is rather based on kind of their analogous seasoning in the UDRP. It's conceivable there could be folks who are more experienced on this side, although, why that would be, I don't know, but it is possible. So again, I guess the question is whether we should make it a broader survey rather than trying to make a very small selection, knowing also that a small selection means an even smaller return on our questions.
Sure, that's a fair question, Greg. Why don't we pose it to the subgroup? Before we pose the question, I have one thought myself on that is that I'm not sure, practically speaking, how a global email would be produced or who would produce that to get to the entirety of those that have filed or responded to a URS. But putting the potential issues aside of how it's practically accomplished, why don't we put it to a vote for the group? Anybody have any thoughts on doing in favor of doing a global mass email to all practitioners that have filed or responded? Anybody have any thoughts in favor of that? Okay, I don't hear anyone assenting to that. Anybody not in favor of that, if it's practically possible? Okay, we have neither yes nor no, other than Greg suggesting the question. I don't know how, again, I don't know if we certainly can't decide how that would work, but I guess we could certainly present it. I see Kathy has her hand up. Kathy?
Hi. I don't know if you'll be able to hear me, Jason and everyone. Question about how we want to define practitioner. I was thinking that it would be people associated, I guess I was thinking people associated with firms or CSC groups that represent or this yo-yo dot email that seems to be responding on behalf of a number of registrants. Do we want to include as practitioner self when the filer is either works for the trademark owner directly or it's the registrant responding on behalf of themselves? So question regarding what is the definition of practitioner that we want to work with? Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. That's a fair point that, you know, I think we should, let's spend a few minutes trying to source through what we're really getting at here. Now, my understanding of the directive was to, you know, be able to get, a group of practitioners using the term as in attorneys and or representatives that are involved in these types of filings and would have some sort of expertise in a URS proceeding, having done them before, trying to get, you know, useful feedback from these participants. Many times, as we know, there are respondents more typically that are, you know, pro se, shall we say, in representing themselves, who I don't think would be well equipped to respond to or answer our questions. So I'm not sure, you know, I think it might behoove the group to, you know, figure out how to properly define who is a practitioner, what is the scope, and then go from there. I see Greg's hand up. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. It seems to me that every filer or respondent is a practitioner for these purposes. In some cases, self, which I think is not really the same thing as pro se, if it's a in-house attorney, seems to have filed, you know, a number of cases like Banco Bilbao. Looks like they probably filed more than many outside counsel have done. You know, and given the fact that this is supposed to be a lightweight proceeding, probably more likely than in other cases for in-house attorneys to try it themselves rather than, you know, hire outside counsel for it, where the bill for the counsel is going to be a multiple of the cost to otherwise make the thing happen. And for that matter, on the respondent side, if we are asking about the experience, if you will, I think the experience of pro se respondents, in-house respondents, whatever, is kind of equally valid. You know, if we're trying to get an expert opinion on the URF, then maybe we pick, you know, a so-called list of experts. But again, even then, you know, do you think that Banco Bilbao or Principal Financial is less or more of an expert than somebody who's filed, you know, 30 UDRPs and 2 URSs? And anytime you try to kind of cherry pick something, if you're trying to get something out of it other than kind of just a series of individual opinions which don't add up to anything, at least if you want to try to analyze it quantitatively, you'd, I think, be better off with the full court press and just presumably emailing everybody. That's at least my view. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Okay, I mean, I think we have really two main opinions forming here. One represented, I'll just, for the sake of, since you brought it up, one represented by Greg, which is having a broad global outreach, and one represented by others in the group, no particular people being mentioned, but that was the original intent, is to have loosely defined, using the term loosely, experts being able to opine on their experience with the URS. Now, if we are, I think one of the things we are, I think, circling around here, if I may, it seems like there's a concern on Greg's part that we have a, you know, we're not cherry-picking too much, and I see that Kathy made a comment in the chat which seems to go towards the intent of what our mandate is to have a group of trademark or brand owners and registrants and others, you know, have enough of a broad representation of all types that we could do our job and maintain, have enough people on both sides. So to Greg's point, making sure that a brand representative that's representing an entity that may not be an attorney would certainly be someone to consider, as would a party that is represented by counsel individually or a firm, as is a respondent represented by counsel or a firm. I would caution that I think we're opening up Pandora's box if we start asking respondents particularly that are pro se to join in on this discussion, but I'll present it to the group. Greg, your hand is still up. Is that from before, or you have something
just
further
a
on the
point of information first? I'd like to know where I can find kind of the original mandate, so I can figure out whether this is kind of a left turn or kind of within the original mandate.
Sure. I mean, Kathy, you might be best able to speak to that. I think we had an email that was sent out, of course, but there were we certainly on last call went through a lot of points. But Kathy, do you have anything further that maybe to help shed light on this?
Yes and no, and I hope you can hear me. And sorry for the background noise. In terms of practitioner, I think it is. Sorry, Jason, ambiguous. So I was actually speaking in my personal capacity when I was agreeing with Scott and saying that, you know, defining a universe that would include kind of trademark, you know, the groups that work with trademark owners like CSC, the groups that work with registrants. We're seeing NameShield and CORE coming in as helping registrants respond to URSs. But so I was thinking practitioner means somebody who kind of specializes in this kind of work, but that's my personal capacity. One thing I did ask the co-chairs was we had talked perhaps about stretching a much wider net and reaching out beyond URS practitioners to UDRP practitioners, and the co-chairs meeting there was pretty, it was unambiguous. They said, no, please stick with URS practitioners. And if you want to go to UDRP practitioners, pick that subset of URS practitioners that are well known as UDRP practitioners, like David Taylor. So if there's a subset we want to go to, certainly the leadership team will bless that. But in terms of how we define URS practitioner, no, I wish I had some Solomonic words on that one, but I don't. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Julie, you have your hand up.
Thanks, Jason, and thanks for your question, Greg. So just for a little bit of background of how this came up, a couple of weeks back in the main RPM, full PDP working group call, there was a discussion about splitting into three sub-teams to try to manage the data gathering a little bit more efficiently, so that the three teams would be working at the same time, because the thought was that we wanted to see how quickly we could gain some data that would help to inform us on URS, and the thought was that we would have say two meetings, last week and this week, to try to quickly identify a group of practitioners, and while that wasn't scoped out, the discussion, I think, was more focused on, as people have said here, experts, attorneys, for example, who have represented clients in URS cases, objective questions to ask those practitioners. And now I would say that the other two subteams probably are going to need a little bit more time for their work, and that's a question that we have here as well. But the intent was to try to fairly quickly come up with a list and not a list of everybody who maybe has, you know, done URS and UDRP, as Kathy noted, but more a list of experts. And I'll just note that something to keep in mind on the practicality side of this, since that's something that staff has to be mindful of, we do not have a budget for doing this outreach. There is no money to, you know, to have, say, an outside group run a survey. We have a separate RFP going on that with the Sunrise and Trademarks, but we don't have a budget for doing any kind of large mass survey. At best, we would have staff do probably a SurveyMonkey survey and try to keep that fairly short so as to encourage responses, and then perhaps identify practitioners who, you know, number one, that we can have contacts for. We don't have a database of contacts handy. We'd need to rely on probably you and, you know, maybe some light searching to find contacts. And, you know, so I don't even know practically how we would get at some kind of global list of anybody who's ever been involved in a U.S. proceeding and their contact information. So just a couple of practical thoughts, and also then finally, this was meant to be a pretty short-term effort, meaning that within, say, a matter of weeks, maybe just, you know, matter of weeks, I should just say, that we would be able to do something and get some data back, you know, pretty quickly. So that would obviously not be possible if we were looking at a global type of inquiry. Sorry, I went on too long. Thanks, Jason.
Okay, thank you, Julie. Yeah, that was that's helpful, I think, to inform our discussions a bit. I do think we do run into practical constraints in terms of even if we wanted to, as a group, invite everyone to respond, I don't think it's practically feasible. Obviously, Julie seems to confirm that, nor does it seem to be in the intent of what we're doing here as a subgroup, trying to reduce the workflow rather than increase it. But I see, Greg, you have your hand up, so I'll let you respond. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. And, Julie, that was very helpful. I think, you know, it seems to me that, you know, I agree that we don't have the kind of necessary predicate to do a global survey as interesting as that might be, and to, you know, deal with every, you know, one who's filed a single URS. I do agree with what Kathy said in the chat that there's kind of a core of people, firms, and organizations who seem to work in this area. And you can see that even more if you search, if you sort the practitioner spreadsheet by, say, the column, you know, with the name of the complainant. So, you know, you can see just a whole bunch coming from, you know, certain places. Same thing if you sort, you know, by the other ones. So I think, and some of these I think would be, you know, kind of the usual suspects that we saw in kind of the off the top of the head list. With people like David Taylor and John Berryhill on it. And some of these, you know, without necessarily knowing who represented Ashley Furniture, might be people that aren't necessarily, you know, well known to us. But because the URS hasn't been around all that long, kind of the idea of who are the repeat users hasn't really, you know, percolated as much. So, you know, Boehringer Ingelheim, you know, has filed 15 of them or so. BNP Paribas has filed a whole bunch, and I see we did have NameShield on the list and has represented them, at least the times the representatives listed on the spreadsheet. So, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Bloomberg, you know, has done a ton, apparently. So I think we probably should go by what the data reveals to be those who have had the most experience with the URS as such, and not try to get, you know, cover the waterfront with everybody, but also not to kind of use our own anecdotal idea of who experts might be. In fact, instead to use some data on who the experts through bitter experience or maybe good experience actually are. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Julie? Okay. Okay, so it sounds like we can move on from dispose of the idea of doing a global mass email for multiple reasons. That leaves us with, we're now 29 minutes into this call. We have a list in front of us with approximately, we got 11 or so practitioners that the group jointly identified last week as parties that are not only U.S. filers, but those that do have a certain level of expertise. And then, as Greg noted, if we, we did go through this exercise of going through the, 700 plus cases to identify where we could other parties. And if we do sort that list, we could, as Greg noted, come up with those that are repeat participants. Where that leaves us at this point is I think it would be useful to maybe find a way to merge the two, in the sense of I don't think it would be wise to dispose of the work that the subgroup did last week and just go based only on the data, but at the same time I think the data does speak. So perhaps we could discuss as a subgroup how the subgroup would like to proceed in light of all the work we did last week and in light of the work we have for this week. Is the subgroup in favor of doing a hybrid approach where we keep the work that we did in identifying those top list of people and then supplementing that with the data, as Greg has suggested? I see Greg. Well, Julie, then Greg. So, Julie?
Oh, thanks, Jason. It's Julie Hedlund from staff. I'll just note that if the subteam does wish to do a merge of the list from last week and the list from the spreadsheet that Kathy provided, staff can certainly sort what's in the spreadsheet that Kathy provided and pull out those that are not duplicative of what we already have on the short list. And add those to our sort of main list where we're, so that we have, a more robust, shall I say, list of practitioners from both sources, and then we can proceed to figure out how to, get contact information from them where we may not know individuals ourselves and might have to, do a little searching to find information. So anyway, that's a staff task that staff can take on.
Sure. Thank you, Julie. And I think that would be very helpful. Just one point before we get to Greg. On following up on your point, Julie, I think, one of the things from a practical standpoint is collectively our subgroup, once we have this list, would probably be able to help staff identify how to contact most of these people. Because we are familiar with many of them. Obviously, there may be some cases where that just won't work. But I think we should also have an idea of what is the universe of the maximum numbers. Are we talking 25? Are we talking 50? Are we talking 10? Are we talking 100 in terms of the length of that list? But first, let me let Greg go. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. With all respect to the list that was done last week, the suggestions from sub-team members, it seems to me that if these are people who have not actually filed or responded to a number of URSs, then they're just people with opinions and not the type of expert or, experienced URS practitioner that we would want to have, particularly if there's somebody who has done none or one or two, we don't have to have a hard number, but it seems to me that somebody who has had only very modest experience with the ORS, even if they're somebody who's kind of known to us for other reasons, that, you know, I'd say there's a pretty big prejudice in to excluding them, because they aren't really, you know, bearing it out, you know, the experts in the actual experience of this. And, you know, including people because we'd like to hear their opinion or because we feel we need to have a counterweight for somebody else's opinion, then that just kind of gets back to just, I think, is using anecdote and personal understanding of relationships instead of actually looking to the practitioners who have had the most experience with the URS, and that really is who we should aim at, especially because, you know, a single experience can be good or bad. 20 experiences will tell you a lot more if they're all good, all bad, 19 good, one bad, 19 bad, one good, or something like that. You'll get a lot more, and that's, I think, another reason to go to frequent flyers as opposed to some sort of other, some sort of more touchy-feely and probably actually incorrect idea who's actually experienced with the URS, especially given the co-chair's admonition not to pick people just because they're experienced with the UDRP. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. We have a number of comments in the chat on this point, but to your point, Greg, I will say that everyone on this list that we reviewed last week has at least one, if not more, either filings or responses in URS proceedings. It's a question, I mean, again, going back to the intent of what our group is trying to do is answer questions about not just procedure, but substantive issues, as well as procedural issues and tactics and approaches involving the URS. Our subgroup is tasked to deal with practitioners. The other subgroup is dealing with the providers. So collectively, is my understanding, I think we should, you know, be clear on what we're trying to accomplish here. And it sounds like the various subgroups are trying to hone in on how we answer some questions. If we start getting into going solely based on volume, as you know, speaking in a personal capacity, not as a sub chair, I think that's a red herring, because many groups have filed, you know, 20 proceedings over one trademark. That's essentially one proceeding, but it counts as 20. So, you know, just going on volume, let's face it, we have a procedure, a process in its infancy with, a universe of parties that have participated in it. I think at a minimum we should say that everybody must have at least filed or responded to at least one URS proceeding to qualify. But to solely cut people off because they haven't filed more than one, or they filed, you know, you have to have at least had done 5 or 10 to qualify, I think would skew the results in a way that's not really what the desired effect is, because if you take into account the WhatsApp cases that I reviewed, well, David Taylor did about 25 of those. It's one case. So, essentially. So that's my personal thought. Greg, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Thanks. I guess there's kind of two questions here. One is, if the cases, were the, all of the WhatsApp cases bundled into a single proceeding and a single response from the same examiner or panelist?
I think they were split into maybe 4 or 5. So okay, one so had maybe 12, and then one had like 12, one had like 3. You know, you understand. You know how it goes. So
that
maybe.
So I think we should count the number of proceedings. And so that's not one case. Maybe it's not 25 either. It sounds like it's more like 4 or 5 or 6. And that, you know, we should look at the number that way. I think that one is far too low a bar, and then I think that also skews the results. very significantly, maybe even more significantly, because we're talking about people who have had, you know, a single experience with this, and then we're, you know, treating them as if they have some sort of, you know, great deal of foundation of knowledge and experience that they're going to give us. And, you know, why would we have them in and exclude somebody who had done 5 or 10 or 20? So I think, you know, we are kind of looking for those with the hands-on, therefore, you know, I would put a minimum floor. Again, we could maybe look at where things break, but probably more like 5, and certainly not 1. If the concern is that we're going to leave out names we recognize, well, that's kind of what happens when you make assumptions about what people, what experience people have, and then find out that actually they don't have that experience. What we're looking for are people who've had URS experience, and we should be getting the most, those with the most experience. If we're making a short list and a collected list, a curated list, we should curate it that way. Any curation is going to have some skew, but I'd rather have a skew toward the maximum number of experiences with the URS rather than the maximum number of familiar names. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Kathy, you have your hand up.
Yeah, this is Kathy. And I understand what Greg is saying. There's only one problem. We have a massively incomplete spreadsheet. We're only dealing with a fraction of the data out there because that's what we've had time to do. So when I was doing the first 100 cases, I was really happy. David Taylor's name, I think, came up once, but I have to go back. And so I was really happy when I got there. A name I recognized, somebody I know is a UDRP panelist, someone I respect, someone who goes back to the drafting of all of this. He just hit on a whole bunch of bullets. So it turns out he's got other cases. But even if he only had that one, I think he'd still be valuable to talk to. And again, the problem here, I think we have to extrapolate. So given that the vast majority of the spreadsheet is still blank, you know, probably people we're seeing once or twice probably have more cases. We just haven't found them. So I would think maybe we do what, you know, let me try a proposal for going forward. Let's do what Greg says. Let's sort. First, maybe see if there's anyone else who's still going to be filling it out like me, you know, if there are other people. And even then, it's incomplete because we're only doing basically half, even if everyone does everything. Only half the spreadsheet's been assigned. But if there are other people doing it, then when they're finished, should we sort by name, like Greg suggested, and create some kind of chart that says, you know, core associations responded to 12 as a complainant representative, yoyo.email, at least based on our findings, has responded to 20 as a registrant representative, and at least see what we're looking at, and just kind of see where the numbers fall out before we make a final decision. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. You know, again, me, Jason, speaking in a personal capacity, just responding to Greg and Kathy, I think we can find a pathway forward that makes everyone happy. I would say I do agree with Kathy on the incomplete nature of the data, but also I wanted to remind everyone that, you know, part of the purpose of this is to be able to speak with people that can answer the questions. It's not just a question on did you have a good experience with the URS and was the provider helpful and did the process work. It's also, you know, more substantive issues that only certain parties would be able to opine on. If you're just filing URSs, that doesn't necessarily qualify you to understand and be able to provide answers to some of the questions. So we have to be careful here and I think have a more of a hybrid approach where we allow for those that all of us on the call know are fairly expert at dealing with these types of issues and can answer the questions in a way that makes sense. I'm not saying we cherry pick in favor of one group or another. We're doing just the opposite. We're actually, it looks like we've already identified a nice cross-section of people that we could probably all agree on this call are well equipped to if we just limited it to the list that we did last week, we'd probably get a good result. If we go beyond that and now have the data sorted, and we then come together, and I guess we would maybe have to have another call and go through that list, I think we could probably do a good job. But that, I guess, gets into the point of how much time we have, and A, how much time we have to do this, and B, is anybody really going to do any more? If you didn't do your list now, are you going to commit to doing it by next week? I don't know. I see Scott's hand is up. Scott.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Scott Austin for the record. I just put in the chat what I've been also thinking about, and that is that some of the most experienced practitioners out there that were on the anecdotal list sort of last week may have counseled their clients to jump the URS and move to UDRP for its long-term benefits, i.e. an actual transfer of domain as opposed to just a short-term period until it renews. So I think that it's still, even though there are a small number of URS cases attributed to some of these more seasoned or sophisticated practitioners, I don't think that should be a grounds for leaving them out if they're willing and have time to participate. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott. Greg has his hand up. Before we get to Greg, Julie, maybe you could help us in terms of, before we kind of move forward, do we have, what is our time frame, A, and B, you know, how much in terms of capacity can we expect to rely on you to handle this? Is a list of 100 too much for staff? Is it, I don't know. That will help us kind of move forward. So I guess dealing with the first issue of time, Julie?
Thanks, Jason. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So the intent was, again, to have all groups try to finish in just a couple of meetings, that is, finish their questions and finish identifying, in the case of this case, practitioners, or in the other case, providers. The document subteam is doing something slightly different, but I think their plan also is to try to be completed with identifying the data they need and keeping in mind something I mentioned earlier, too. The subteam for documents is also identifying questions for practitioners, although they are not helping to identify practitioners. So we'll have some additional questions coming from them after today's call. So, and then we have the update at ICANN 61, and I know at least the provider subteam anticipates working for probably a couple more meetings after ICANN 61. So, and again, that's to identify the providers and the questions. And so, you know, we certainly can extend there as well. But I think by, say, at the end of March, we would want to have all the practitioners and questions identified. And I would say also the contact information for the practitioners so that we could then proceed to the contacts and start, you know, send out a survey and start, you know, getting some data back. And as far as capacity, if we're working with the spreadsheet, you know, and say sorting out names, I think that's, you know, that is a fairly simple step of setting some filters and doing some counts. With respect to contacting 100 or 50 or however many, it's going to depend on whether or not we have contacts, really, because the time-consuming thing would be if you give me 100 names and we have contact information for five, the time-consuming thing will be to research all of those entities and find, you know, a suitable email address that might elicit a response. Of course, the more precise information we can have where we have a name and, you know, a personal email, we're going to get a better response, and that's going to save us some time as well. I hope that's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Julie. That is helpful. So it sounds as if we just look at the calendar, folks, you know, those of us that are traveling to ICANN in a week and, 10 days, 12 days, you know, we'll be doing work there, but we're not going to be working on these lists per se. We have next week, possibly, and then we have the following week after ICANN to begin to provide staff with provide the group with the final list. So we don't have a lot of time in terms of that standpoint. So I'm hoping that we could, we'll let Greg speak now, and hopefully we can put it to a vote and try to put this to rest. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. First, I didn't think we voted in working group. What do I know? I've only done it for 11 years. Secondly.
Sorry, Greg. Go ahead.
I suggest somewhat of a hybrid idea, continuing on the hybrid idea, but I have to push back on something you said, which was that just filing a whole bunch of URF cases doesn't give you the wherewithal to answer the questions we have. I would think that's exactly what we would want. If we're looking for kind of the domain name bar pundits, that's a different thing. I don't think that's what we were asked to look for. So maybe what we should do is kind of have two lists rather than merging them. One can be a list of people we think are kind of generally expert and have at least touched one URS case, and we can kind of deal with them as, pundits, color commentators, maybe those that who've advised away from it and find out the reasons for that. I don't know. But in terms of actual experience in the trenches, I think we want those who have spent the most time in the trenches and to shy away from them and say that just because they've done this a lot, they don't have that's not kind of a necessary and sufficient predicate for them to be considered expert, I think, is to introduce a kind of selection bias into this that's away from actual experience and toward those who we believe to be kind of experienced practitioners in a broader base, which, again, we found out pretty firmly is not what we were asked to assemble. And I don't know that we have to go up to 100. I do think we need to get more work done on the spreadsheet. I'm happy to do my share. I think we have also a big issue. I don't know if there's any way around it in the short run, which is that a lot of the in-house plaintiffs, if you will, or complainants, are only identified by the name of the company, like Nissan. And there's no practitioner identified at all, nor is there any email, it seems. I don't know if ADR Forum can give us any better information than that, but that kind of leaves out and probably further skews our sample, if you will. I don't even know if I want to call it a sample. Our collection of people, if we're not going to get potentially, major filers who, due to the way the system is set up, can't actually be identified in a contactable way. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Just to respond in a personal capacity, actually, and as sub-working group chair, taking the issue of whether we're having a domain bias is wholly incorrect. If anything, we've done a good job to avoid doing that, and I've certainly, looked at this from an objective perspective. I will say that, we should move on to the questions because it will help inform this discussion. If you look at the questions, you will see that my point earlier was not to create bias in the list, but rather you do need people that have expertise to answer the questions. That is the point, not whether you're a brand, typically brand representative owner or typically domain representative owner. You still need expertise to answer the questions in a coherent manner, and some of these questions have some, significant points, such as, understanding appellate procedures, understanding, the standards. These are questions that only those that are experienced understand what's there. So that was the point, just to be clear on that, not to create a bias. I do believe we should move on to the list to help inform this
discussion.
I'd just
like to respond briefly to that. First, I did not mention anything about domain or domainer or respondent bias. I just mentioned bias generally as something that happens when you start making qualitative choices or choices based on certain things. So if you thought I was referring to domain bias, that's kind of interesting to me.
Well, you did mention domain in the call. You did mention that specifically, but perhaps I misheard.
Well,
but we can.
No, I was only referring to domain in the neutral sense, not in the sense that both sides here are in the domain business, broadly speaking. So I was not referring to the domain investor group or the counsel that tend to work for them. I was just referring to all of this as domains.
Sure.
So no, that was not what I was referring to. I'm just talking about generally. And I never thought I'd say this, but it's too bad we don't have George Kiros on the call, in a sense. because I know he loves to talk about how about selection issues in this case. And while we might disagree in particular, I think it's important if we're basically just getting – and I was not saying we shouldn't have those here who are, while not particularly experienced in the URS, have a broader view and may be able to give us some interesting analytical ideas. I still think that experience in the URS is it should be our kind of prime mover for at least a second list of actual URS practitioners. We can have a pundit collection who may or may not have done a lot of cases. They might be on both lists. And I'm not saying we should kick out those who haven't had a ton of experience if they've got a broader perspective, though we should understand if they're talking from URS experience or from, a broader experience. I don't care which side of the bar they come from. So I still think that, the expertise to answer some of these questions, if that expertise doesn't come from doing URSs, then maybe we should think about either those questions or, who we are asking. But certainly, if you're saying that we have questions that the people who filed a lot of URSs can't answer because they don't have some other layer of experience, that's kind of interesting and perhaps peculiar. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Fair point. Let's move on to the questions if we can. That is, Julie had put the link up before. It's earlier in the chat, I believe. Further to your point, Greg, I think we all agree that you have to have relevant experience, and that means experience with the URS. So I don't think we need to belabor that point further. We are all in agreement that you need to have experience in the URS. So I think we can put that to rest. We are just running out of time, and that is a problem. Kathy, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Sorry, coming off mute. Can we move on to the questions?
Yes, I think they're on screen now. So,
okay. And I just wanted to point out that there is a. I wanted to see if anyone else had done some updates. There is a newer version, but it was from yesterday, sometime yesterday afternoon, where I added some titles and I kind of just wordsmithed. I didn't change anything. I wordsmithed the first section to see if people liked it. But we're looking at an older version, so I wanted to see if anyone else had gone to this and tried to edit it. And just to let you know, Jason, that we're looking at something older now. Thank you.
Okay. So if I'm understanding you, Kathy, what you see on screen does not match your updates. Is that what you're saying?
It probably doesn't match the Google Doc right
okay.
now.
Okay.
But my
there
name
is a, yeah, there is a Google Doc. I don't know if there's a link. Oh, there's the link, yeah, Kathy. Is that what you posted, Julie, the link to the Google Doc right there?
Yes, it is. And it shows a bunch of edits.
Okay. Okay, good.
So I think I'm assuming those are your edits. I can't tell. Oh, yes. Actually, I'm at the link now, and it's showing, Kathy, all of your edits. I'm just wondering if the redlining didn't come through when the PDF was generated. So that if you look at the in the room.
Do you have to download it as a Microsoft Word doc and then make a PDF out of it? Otherwise, you lose everything that's in suggest mode.
Right, and I think that's perhaps what happened with what you're seeing in the Adobe Connect room, but I'm looking at the link right now, and that is looking current.
This is George and Hrovatsky. Can I have the link resent to me? Because apparently it got caught in my in the spam filter that we have, and by the time I got it open, it just didn't work.
Sure, and I'm sorry, I didn't catch who.
George and Hrovatsky.
Oh yeah, George. Sure, and it's you're not in the Adobe Connect room because it's also in the Adobe Connect room chat. But I'll send it to you separately. Thanks.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I'm on the phone only.
Okay, so I believe everyone can see either the list on the screen or in the Google spreadsheet. This is what we put together from last week. Thank you, Kathy and staff for both memorializing these points and editing them. As everyone can see, you can scroll, and it's, I guess, what, 1.5 pages of pretty decent group of questions. For those that weren't on the call last week, maybe you can go in and edit yourself and add to the list. I don't think we have the time right now. I don't know how much time we have on this call, but to actually go through and go one by one, but I don't know how you want to handle this, guys. We have 30 minutes? Okay, thank you, Kathy. I mean, Julie. So we have 30 minutes. Those that weren't on the call, do you have any questions that you might want to add here or that you don't see in terms of scope? We have procedural, substantive, practical, and tactics. I think that's pretty broad. Any other points that people, as a broad issue, may want to bring up? No? Okay, good. I think Kathy's edits are great. I think we're in a good starting point here. If we want to scroll through the procedural issues, anybody have any additional points on procedural issues that they don't see there that might be a good additional question to a practitioner? Scott? You're on mute, Scott.
Yeah, hi. I'm Scott Austin for the record. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Scott.
Okay, great. Maybe this was available beforehand, but this is sort of the first time I'm seeing it anyway. And, are we going to have more time to make edits or to respond to what Kathy has done as far as her changes or her edits?
So the answer is yes. This was available.
And yes, final presented after the call.
And yes, we do have more time to edit this. And if that makes sense, I mean, certainly we can take it offline and make edits over the next week. If we decide we need to have another call next week, we could maybe set a defined time period for people to edit the document directly. But yes, this was circulated after our last call.
Okay, because I wasn't sure if we were actually preparing the questions. I know there was a document subgroup, and I thought perhaps they were handling the questions issues. But that's good. Fine. I guess one of the things that jumps out at me is we keep referring to examiners. Is that what we're going, the term we're going to use, or is it panelist in the U? I mean, maybe that doesn't make any difference, but examiner sounds like something from the USPTO in terms of an examining attorney.
Good point.
Has there been a consensus on the use of that to define who's making the decision?
I don't have any. I agree that may not be the appropriate term. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on that. I see Greg, you have your hand up. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. Greg Chatton again for the record. First, looking at this document, Kathy's edits do a good job of some cleanup or a good amount of cleanup on the first third, the second, and third could the rest of it could, benefit from the same level. This is, very much a kind of a discussion draft at this point. There's kind of internal notes and, definitely needs a lot of work. And, we should be accurate and useful. I know it doesn't have to be super polished. We can hand it over as a working draft to the plenary. But I do think, we definitely need to work on this, in terms of both, phrasing and getting rid of things like, saying, this might get into training for providers for the larger group. That's clearly not, part of our actual question. This is, I think, far away from where it needs to be. It's a good start, but that's about all. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. I do agree with Greg's points on this. I think it's understood that this is a work in progress. Unfortunately, it seems that many people didn't get access to the document or didn't see the link this week, so that, of course, is holding us back a bit. So now that we all have the link, hopefully I invite everyone to go in, make your edits, make your suggestions, and that may help us help us clean it up and get it in good shape. Greg, your hand is up. Is it still up, or is it a new? Is it the old? Okay, thank you. Well, I guess since not everyone on the call has been able to review this list, and we're just looking at it now in many cases for the first time, perhaps we should look to table this and come up with time for, do we agree on having a call next week? Is that necessary? And do we, set a time frame for between now and next call, perhaps, to have your comments in, and so that we have a much more finalized document to review next week? Scott?
Yes, Scott Austin, for the record. I just was wondering, the genesis of the questions as we have them right now, was that prepared by staff, or where did they come from?
No, that was prepared by the group during the last call. Much of the call was spent, bandying about ideas and questions, and we came up with these topics, procedural, issue, substantive, practical, and so on, and then everyone just chimed in with thoughts and questions, and staff memorialized it.
Okay. Yeah, I unfortunately started that call at 2 when I thought that was what the starting time was from the notice. So, okay, got it.
Okay, I think George,
go ahead. Yeah, George Nanshimansky for the record. Jason, I came out a little bit later on the call, so maybe you already discussed it, but are we having a meeting of our little subgroup during the San Juan meeting, and if so, when?
So, Kathy, go ahead. Yeah, you have the info. Go ahead, Kathy. Kathy, are you there?
I apologize. The fun of being not at your desk. Okay, so my understanding is that we are having a sub-team meeting, but for the purpose of presenting to the larger working group, that all three sub-team meetings, and it's currently scheduled for our, and Julie, please correct me if I'm wrong, it's currently scheduled for our face-to-face meetings. We have 3 hours of face-to-face meetings on the very first Saturday afternoon on March 10th. And so all the sub-teams will be sharing with each other what they've done. And so it was mentioned earlier that the document sub-team has some questions that they want to pass on to us. So, and also questions they want to pass on to the providers group. So chances are that process will take place in Puerto Rico. So I think we need to have something kind of to present there. But right now I don't believe there's any plans for breakouts of these data subteams in Puerto Rico. But Julie, please let me know if I'm wrong. Thank you.
Well, that George and Javasi again. So that's great to know, because then it seems to me that we ought to have a call next week on Wednesday, and that will give everybody time to go through the document and put whatever comments or edits, and at least we'll have something that we can go over if we're going to present something on that Saturday. I don't know how everybody else feels about that.
This is Jason for the record. I agree with you, George. I think at this point, we made some progress on this call, we didn't get to, nearly where we needed to be. So I think we would need to do another call and spend the next week. It would be advisable to spend the next week going through all these points and trying to come with a final, working document that we're satisfied with, and hopefully by the next week we could also come up with a list of those practitioners and have completed the data sort before the call, and that would allow us in theory to have some agreement on the call with these final points. Is that something that people on this call could commit to doing over the next week, to take the time to review the document and or make your own edits to it? And I guess at this point the open issue of that list, practitioners list, is if anybody wants to make review any further cases and add to the data, that's fine. But perhaps we should put a cutoff on that so that staff could, pull a final list and do the data sort that we could share it with us. So that's up to you and your respective schedules.
George Nate Jovansky, for the record, could we just say maybe by Tuesday at noon or something like that all comments with us so staff has time to prepare something for us for Wednesday?
Julie, go ahead.
Hi, this is Julie Hubbin from staff. So that will work for the questions. For anybody who wishes to do more work in Kathy's spreadsheet, it would be helpful if we could have a shorter cutoff for that, because it will take quite a bit longer, I think, to sort through that data and come up with a ranked list of practitioners for folks to look at by next Wednesday.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. So sounds like we could agree to leave the prep question spreadsheet open until Tuesday. Do we want to say by close of business Friday Eastern, or we want to use ICANN time? That is Los Angeles time, meaning not ICANN time, but Pacific time on the document, and then let's find a time that we can cut off for the practitioners' list. Maybe it'd be easier if we. How many people are really going to take the time to add to that practitioners' list? Because the request was made some time ago. So if anybody really wants to participate in that, I see. Okay, Colin.
This is Greg. I'm on audio only, but I didn't join before, I'll take a double dip.
Okay. So Greg will dive into the is willing to dive into the practitioners lists. Colin, I see no hand up. Okay, Julie, go ahead.
Yeah, great, thanks. So at least since you're I think the only one who's here anyway who's volunteered to take another look, maybe if you want to let us know, when you might be able to complete that look, then we'll go ahead and set that as an end time to close out the practitioners list so staff can start doing a compilation.
Will do.
Okay, so it sounds like Greg, you'll let the group know what time you need, what kind of time frame you need to do your work. And then I guess you could coordinate with Julie on that. It doesn't look like anybody else is interested in delving back into that list last call, anybody else have any interest in going back to that list?
I'd like to look at it one more time, George Nechovansky.
Okay. So I guess in the interest of trying to help staff and be cognizant of Julie and the staff's time, Julie, is there something that you want to set as an absolute cutoff that you need, and everybody else can work around that? Go ahead, Kathy.
Just, I think I'm going back into the list. It looks like Colin is too. So Colin, Kathy, Greg, maybe cut off. Is Monday night too late? Should we do Sunday night?
Julie.
Whatever would work with staff. Thanks.
Yeah, this is Julie Hillen from staff. So, I mean, if folks could do it by Sunday night, I know George is suggesting maybe Saturday by 11 p.m., but if folks need until Sunday night, I mean, then that would give staff a couple of days to, you know, manipulate the data, which I think would be sufficient time. And then at cutoff of, even COB on Tuesday for the questions would be more than sufficient, because in that respect, I'm assuming what staff will do is just capture as a capture as a Word document and then a PDF so that we can reflect the red lines, the latest version of the question. Staff isn't going to be doing any actual editing of it because it is a sub-team generated document. So staff just needs time to, you know, pull out a Word, make sure the red lines are all there, save it as a PDF, and probably also close the document for editing just so that we are all looking at the most current version at our meeting on Wednesday. So the suggestion would be COB on Sunday for practitioner list and COB Tuesday for questions, if that works.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. I think that makes sense. Anybody object to using those times and cutoffs? Okay, it looks like no one's voiced any objection to that, so we'll go with close of business Sunday and close of business Tuesday for the practitioners list and the question list, respectively. Julie, your hand is up again, or is that from before? Okay. So we have a cutoff time that allows everybody to manage their own schedules. Hopefully we'll all be able to continue the important efforts here to move this forward. I guess we should consider that in light of Puerto Rico and next week's call, we should have I ask everyone to at least, you know, spend time reviewing these questions and practitioners lists before the call so that we could be efficient on the call and make sure that we can move forward and decide, you know, this is a final document that we could present to the larger group. Anyone have any? It looks like, Scott, you have some questions. Where in the chat you said? Okay. Any other questions before we adjourn? Kathy's typing. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, should we have some kind of a protocol for how to determine who was actually responsible within a firm? Because, I mean, most of the ones that I did in my 50 or whatever, and one of those was a case that included, it was one case that included many, many domain names that I believe Doug Eisenberg handled for the complainant. When we have just a firm, or we've mentioned in-house counsel perhaps when just a party is referenced for one side or the other, are we going to take it upon ourselves or take some approach to finding who within the firm actually was responsible for preparing, you know, had the experience of filing the URS complaint?
Yeah, thank you, Scott. I think that goes back to our earlier points on once we get the data, hopefully maybe part of next week's call, we could use that time to say, okay, once staff has circulated that final working list, we could help identify the appropriate parties. Now, obviously, to your point, it may be difficult to identify, in some cases, who those practitioners are within the firm, but hopefully with between the 12 participants here and anybody else on the call next week, maybe we could collectively help identify that. And then hopefully there will only be a few gaps that we'll have to figure out how to resolve. That might be a good use of next week's time, is if we have to identify who these parties are and how to reach them. But I would hope that between all of us, we should be able to identify them. Okay, so any other questions before we adjourn? I guess it looks like we're setting the next call, Julie, for is that March 7th?
Yeah, that's correct. It would be March 7th. The only question is, right now these calls have been scheduled for 90 minutes. I think Kathy suggested that this next call could be 60 minutes. Do folks have a preference, or should we do 90 just in case we need the time?
Anyone have any thoughts on that? I'm happy with 60 minutes. Colin's in favor. I don't think anyone's in favor of doing longer calls, but if we can dispose of this in 60 minutes, that's great. Maybe that will help us. Jay is in favor of 60. So anybody looking for a longer call? Looks like no. So, okay, let's go with 60 minutes, same time next week, March 7th. And by then we will all agree that we'll have those edits done, and we'll hopefully be able to have a productive final call before Puerto Rico. Greg has a question. How are we dividing up work on the practitioner spreadsheet?
Jason,
Greg,
this is Kathy.
Yes, go ahead, Kathy.
I apologize. I'm not in the Adobe Connect group anymore. I would be happy to send Greg a section of the spreadsheet. Since I was the one who kind of divvied it up, I'd be happy to take a look and send Greg a section, if that's okay.
That's great.
Perfect.
Excellent. Okay, so Kathy, you'll handle that. Okay. Well, any other questions? Good. Well, thank you, everyone, for taking time from your important busy days to do this. I know these working groups can be difficult, but thank you for all your effort, and I think we're making good progress. So thank you, staff. Thank you, everybody on the call. Thank you, Kathy, for joining us from Amtrak. And we'll talk to everyone next week.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everyone, and thanks so much, Jason, for chairing. Very, very helpful, everyone. And we'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
Bye, all.
And once again, the meeting.